Welcome to the Itinerant Angler Podcast.
Though the year was 1900, 15 years.
Well, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is the 51st episode of the Itinerant Angler Podcast, and I'm glad to say that it is going to be the first of season four. Season four is going to be a big one for you guys. I know you're going to enjoy it. And today we have something we've never had before. My guests today are Tom Pirro of Fish & Fly Magazine and Richard Hewitt of Fish & Fly Limited in the UK. Guys, thanks for coming on the podcast.
You're entirely welcome. Delighted to be here.
Okay, well, this is the first time that, as my listeners will know, that we've tried to interview two folks at once, so this may be slightly a little awkward at first, but hopefully we'll get to a nice flow in a few minutes. Let's start out by doing this. Richard, why don't you introduce yourself and explain to folks why it is that you would be having a joint interview with Tom.
Well, hi, yeah, I'm Richard Hewitt of Fish & Fly in the UK. We run an international website called fishandfly.com, and clearly the namesake print magazine in the United States has always been of interest to us, and I've been a subscriber now for some time. And when I heard that possibly it would be available for acquisition, that's when I went to see Tom in Seattle, and he helped to broker a deal with the owners, Turnstile, to the position we are now, where we actually have ownership of the magazine.
So I guess it's fair to say then that Fish & Fly UK and Fish & Fly United States have merged.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Tom, what does that mean in terms of what subscribers can see in terms of their magazine, and also what direction the company will be going?
Well, we're still working out those details. I guess what I can say at this point, and Richard would be probably better able to elaborate, but what I can say at this point is that we are committed to maintaining the same level of quality that we've become known for. There will be a print Fish & Fly in the future. Exactly the frequency, exactly the form it takes, as I said, we're still working that out. But I think the main point here is that we're really going to be creating a global brand. Fish & Fly will be much stronger as a communications presence, really, in linking all fly fishers throughout the world.
I would say that in just sort of my limited experience with the website and the magazine, they both almost are complementary to begin with, because the website focused more on international destinations, especially from an American perspective, and really the magazine did too. Richard, do you think that's fair?
Yes, it is. It's rather interesting that whilst fishandfly.com is operated from the UK, we really have an international audience, and 25% already come from the USA. We have about 45% in the UK, and then the rest throughout Europe and the rest of the world. So I think it's fair to say we're already an international website. And also, if you look at Fish & Fly magazine, although it's published in the US, a lot of the stories that are in there really relate to an adventure angler who is actually fishing, for example, in New Zealand or the Seychelles, or should we say Scotland or Norway. And I think that's quite relevant. So they're very similar, but with the website and the instant information that we can put on there, I think it gives another perspective, particularly to the subscribers of Fish & Fly magazine, that gives them a wider choice, really, and they can come to our website and get news and of events, you know, immediately, and fishing conditions and booking for fishing, etc. So it can do an awful lot that the magazine can't do, but then on the other side, I'm a subscriber to a number of these magazines, and I just love sitting there and reading them, which is easier on the eye than staring at a computer the whole time. So I think the two are complementary.
Absolutely. Well, I think what would be interesting for folks is to hear a little bit of sort of the history of both companies. So, Tom, tell us a little bit about how Fish & Fly magazine was founded and what it's been.
Well, actually, it's kind of a there's a short answer and a long answer. The long answer is that the magazine actually started as Wild Steelhead and Atlantic Salmon in the early 1990s. It morphed into Fish & Fly magazine in the year 2000. we, from the beginning, have tried to, I guess, to put it simply, embrace the authentic in fishing. We wanted, our editorial aim has been to be creative, be different than everything else that's out there. We've not been afraid of controversy. We have also not been afraid to introduce a little humor from time to time. And I think overall tried to present the sport of fly fishing on really a higher plane than one normally sees in most periodicals. And I don't mean that in a snooty way, but we've shown pictures of the beauty of fly fishing, the beautiful places where we fish, done it in a fresh, exciting way, and we've also told stories and not been afraid to tell them in long form where necessary. So I think those are some of the things that have set us apart.
And I know, Richard, that the history of fishandfly.co.uk, I don't know how you guys say that over there, the website is basically one of sort of salmon fishing and a focus on that part of the sport. Is that accurate?
Well, no, I'd say all types. I mean, from its start, in 1998, it was more focused on trout fishing. More recently, we've had an emphasis towards salmon because, for example, I'm on the board of the North Atlantic Salmon Fund and I work closely with Ollie Vigfusson. I'm a salmon angler myself, although I do fish for other species, but we're moving a little bit more in that direction. But certainly if you were to look at the website, there's just as much information about trout fishing and saltwater fishing and other areas. So I think, you know, whilst one of our plans is to build on the salmon side, and we're quite well known for having the hot news when there's a large salmon caught on the Alta in Norway, for example, and this type of thing, and some of the other magazines actually get their information from our site. So that's one of the benefits of the site, is that, you know, as soon as something special happens, we find people will get in touch with us quite quickly.
One of the things that I really am sort of intrigued by in this whole situation, and I hope to get both of your feedback on it, this is the first time to my knowledge that what was a web-based company has purchased what was a traditional print media company. And it's the kind of thing that people have been predicting would happen for years, but it's the first time that I've actually seen it occur. Tom, do you see that from your sort of background in publishing as a bit of a reversal, sort of the days of websites being second-class citizens are over, or how do you view that?
Oh, I wouldn't say the days are over. I think Richard put it well a few moments ago when he said that the two venues complement each other and each has its strength. I don't think that. I mean, I'm an old print guy. I've been editing fishing magazines for longer than I care to admit. I've been editing fishing magazines for more than 30 years, so
dang.
I've seen quite a bit happen in over that time. There will always be a place for print. People want to hold books and magazines in their hands. There's a tactile quality to that. As Richard said, at some point you get sort of bleary-eyed staring at a screen. But I think what this signals in fishing anyway is that we're going to build something here that sort of has it both ways. We're going to continue to create a beautiful publication that people can have in their hands and they can save and go back to, and which highlights beautiful graphics and showcases great writing, and we'll also have that instantaneous ability to get the current stream flow on particular rivers, or to see how a certain river has been fishing over the last few days or weeks. Magazines obviously cannot do that, nor nowadays can newspapers.
Richard, what about your perspective on it? Were you in on the ground floor at Fish and Fly, and have you seen that kind of transition in terms of how the website is perceived, or is it something for you a little bit later on?
I think it's taken some time for people to value websites generally. I mean, it's obviously a huge growth industry. But if you take different situations like catch reports, the height of a river, I mean, it's rather interesting. We work very closely with Fish Britain. We've got a sort of strategic alliance with them. And they have, for example, in Scotland, they have gillies who use their mobile phones to report how many salmon have been caught that day, and it's an automated process. So the same evening, you can see that maybe on the junction pool on the Tweed that 20 salmon have been caught, and that's a typical number that would be caught there. And if you're, and it tells you what the river level is. And if you're going up fishing the following week on the Tweed, that's pretty nice sort of information to have. Now, if you bring out a magazine with a catch report, by its very nature, it's nearly always 3 weeks or a month old. And you know, whilst that's of interest, it doesn't help you if you're going fishing the next week. If you put it into saltwater terms, you might want to take your bonefish flies or your trevally flies. It's just having up-to-date reports, and that's one of the things we're looking at to extend this instant information that the fly fisherman can gain, particularly when he's going on trips, because that really is where fish and fly is, the adventure travel. And then when it comes to commentating on various aspects, government interventions, things like that, as I said before, I think if, on a website you can mention it, you can say, look, this is what's going on, but no one really wants to read the type of article that you read in the magazine that might go to 6 or 7 pages and goes into depth, and where someone like, with Tom's experience, actually commentates and can cause controversy or whatever. But I think it's easier in a magazine. In fact, it's only really possible in a magazine. We can put it on the website, but it's, if it's too long, people get a bit bored, I think, on the website. It's just not so easy on the eye. So I think that that's why the two are so complementary. It's instant information against the pleasure of sitting and holding something as valuable as that magazine is. I think that's the difference.
Now, Tom, in terms of the editorial direction of the magazine, are folks going to be able to see Fish and Fly next year and go, okay, this is the magazine I recognize, this is what I signed up for, or is it going to go a different direction?
Yes. In a word, we have every intention of maintaining, not merely maintaining, but improving the quality. There are a lot of things that I think we're going to be able to do with this new alliance that we weren't able to do in the past. Again, I think that we're going to bring all the same talent to bear on this new venture, the same commitment to excellent writing, superb graphics, and with the addition of having this new international stage. So I'm pretty excited about it.
One thing, just to stick with Tom for a second, I noticed that you guys had quite a film crew at the Fly Tackle Retailer Show the year before this year, and I wonder, will that be coming back, and would that content wind up on Fish and Fly's website?
That was part of the Turnstile Publishing Company company's group. Those guys who did the filming at the Fly Fishing Retailer Show actually were the ones who covered the PGA Tour. And so we kind of got the pan drippings. We got to use them when they weren't in Scotland or Pebble Beach or wherever. So those guys will not be back. Whether we will do something else with video in the future, particularly with the connection with the international website now, I don't know. But it sure would be an intriguing prospect.
Richard, in terms of the logo, I think we talked about this briefly. I have always admired Fish and Fly Magazine's logo. No offense to yours, but what's going to happen with that?
I suspect that Fish and Fly in the USA. Yeah, I think Fish and Fly USA probably had a different budget for theirs than we did in 1998. And I think the answer might be in that answer, that we actually love the Fish and Fly USA one with the ampersand, and I've already sent that off to our own graphic designers here to look at how we can utilize that. So yes, I think it's probably going to win the battle as far as that goes.
Now,
I want to take the opportunity to say that yes, maybe we did have a little bit bigger budget, but the real credit to that goes to our great graphic designer, Greg Smith.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. Well, I want to say, too, Richard, in terms of the website's contents and sort of impact, because it is an international company and because I think it's fair to say the parent company is the website, is Fish and Fly going to have more of a European presence than a lot of the other American magazines? Are you going to try to target the European market with the magazine?
I wouldn't say more. I mean, clearly we, as far as our contributors and some of our content, I guess there will be more. But it's interesting that we have worked with other websites in the States, and they do exchange information now. As far as the magazine goes, as I said earlier, it is actually quite an international magazine. But so therefore, to have something on fishing in Norway, salmon fishing in Norway, would be something you'd almost expect to see. If you then had something on salmon fishing in Scotland or in Iceland, I suppose that's something you'd expect to see. So hopefully it will be of interest to all parties. Now, one of the interesting things that I think Tom and I have got to discuss is the type of advertising you put in the magazine. Because if we're going to turn it into an international magazine, we have to look at what appeals to anglers throughout the world rather than just in the US. So maybe you might see more international brands being focused on. But I don't know. This is something, we're on a bit of a learning curve here, because as you say, it's a slightly unusual situation. But I'm pretty determined about this. And we've done quite well so far in building up a community. And I think that's what we're trying to do, is build a community of fly fishermen and then bridging the gap between them and the people in the industry, not just the tackle manufacturers, but also those who provide fishing, and to link the two, because I'm sure there's people all around the world who would love to have more information about lodges and beats in Scotland or wherever. So, fly fishing is international. You can't get away from that. So I don't think you're suddenly going to see Fish and Fly becoming European, and to be fair, I don't think Tom would let that happen anyway, even if I wanted it. I mean, he is the editor, and I must emphasize that I'm not an editor, and he will steer the content of that magazine more than we will.
That's excellent. And just to stay with you one more time, Richard, I wanted to ask, we've heard a little about Tom's background, but what about your own in fly fishing? You told me at one point that you had owned a fly shop.
Well, yes, I if you want quick-potted history, I worked as a Lloyd's insurance broker and then retired from that business, and I ended up as chairman of Farlow's of Pall Mall and Sportfish, who are probably two leading retailers in the UK. And it was through that I met the owner of Fish and Fly, who, rather interestingly, he wanted to start fly fishing, and he looked on the internet in 98 and couldn't really find anything that told him how to tie the knots and all the rest of it. I'm sure there was some on there, but he was a web designer, so he thought, well, I might as well set my own up. And he did it without, he set it up without actually knowing anything about fly fishing. And so, he actually worked for us at Farlow's and Sportfish. And I contacted him when I thought that he wasn't making the most of the website, and that's when I got into that. And it's been a steep learning curve for me, the various different types of websites, and I'm still bamboozled by a lot of the information that I'm being given. But it we're getting there, and I think we've done very well. We've certainly grown the community quite considerably, and the forums are quite interesting. We get an awful lot of traffic on our forums, and they stay on the forums for an average of 12 minutes, which for a website is actually quite a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's I'm quite happy with the direction it's going in. This acquiring Fish and Fly in the US was a little bit of a shock to me, but I mean it wasn't exactly something in the business plan, but I think it just works, and it will accelerate the plans that we have.
Tom, in terms of you've sort of got this new white space. I mean, before you had to fill your book each time you printed a magazine. Now you've got the possibility, and I know you had a website before, but now you've got a really large, high-traffic website. Do you think you're going to start spilling content over to the web and begin to work articles into just the electronic format?
Oh, I'm sure. And again, we don't have the exact strategy or game plan worked out, but I'm sure that will happen. There will be opportunities to excerpt material. There will be situations where when chasing down a certain story or working on something, we can quickly get it on the web. I mean, for example, but it's by utter coincidence, I was at a lodge in Terra del Fuego last March, and a gentleman from Fairbanks, Alaska, a dentist there, caught the biggest brown trout that was ever caught on the river and probably ever caught on the fly anywhere.
You were at the lodge when that fish was caught?
Yes.
Wow.
And I wasn't fishing with Brian, but he came cruising in a half hour after we did. It was the last day of our week, and started flashing around the digital photos, and everybody was in awe. I think it weighed 44 and a half pounds or so. So there's a perfect, and I included that in my editorial. Actually, it was the subject of my editorial in our Travel and Tackle annual, which came out several months later. But had we had the fishandfly.com connection, that fish would have been flashed all over people's screens within hours.
And it's absolutely a world record brown trout. And I mean, that's huge. That's the biggest it gets.
Yeah, well, from the pictures anyway, it looked like a Chinook.
You mentioned that you had a kind of a humorous background at Fish and Fly, and I'm sure that over the course of several years of putting together a magazine basically by yourself, there had to have been a few occasions that came up. Would you care to share one of those with us?
Well, I don't know if I have a humorous background. I will let other people decide that, but the magazine, I think, has been imbued with some amount of... We've been somewhat self-effacing. While we take the tradition of fly fishing seriously and respect it, we have never been afraid to not take ourselves too seriously. I think in fishing, it's remarkable how many people take themselves too seriously. Probably the funniest thing for me anyway was a year or so into the new creation Fish and Fly, I got a phone call from a young lady from New York who said that she wanted to write for me, and she was coming to see Sage on Bainbridge Island, and could she stop by and have lunch and show me some pictures, etc. So of course I said yes, and turned out to be a woman who was at the time, the girlfriend of the owner of Urban Angler in New York. Her name was Catherine Hooper, and she and John Fisher, her boyfriend, had just returned from Seychelles, and she proceeded to show me a bunch of crumbs before digital of herself scanty attire, bikini, red ones, blue ones, purple ones, holding lots of big bonefish. And so that was irresistible to me. I found out she actually could write, so we published the feature story by her and put a shot of her on the cover releasing about an 8-pound, 9-pound bonefish, and that just unleashed the floodgates. I've never in 30 years of doing this received so many letters. Oh, actually, I take that back. When I was editor of Trout Magazine in the late 1980s, I probably set the record with outraged letters from people responding to a photo that we published of Idaho guide Michael Lawson taking a pee in the Henry's Fork. But the cover with Hooper releasing a bonefish comes in second. We have I'll just read you a couple of quick quotes here. Here's from Don, Walnut Creek, California. Dear editor, thank you for the delightful lead bonefishing article by titillating pictures of Catherine Hooper. For the past 20 years, I have frozen my now 82-year-old buns off searching and casting for steelhead. I think I'll throw away my Patagonia long johns and my neoprenes and ask Ms. Hooper if I can go ankle wading with her on a nice warm Indian Ocean. Hoo-ha. Where do I get in line? followed by Dear Editor. If I wanted to look at TNA, I'd buy Penthouse. You guys blew it! Exclamation point. I can't believe some bonehead, all caps, guy designed your magazine cover. What an idiot. Alice from Aurora, Colorado.
Oh, man. Well, it's nice to know that fly fishermen have such carefully thought-out opinions. Richard, do you anticipate future conflicts coming out of your man Tom here?
Well, I didn't until just then, but no, I'm sure there won't be. I mean, I've got a sense of humor, and, you know, I love a bit of fun. I think you've got to bring that into life. So, I think we're probably going to move even more in that direction, because you have to be have a light side of these things. So, no, we've not known each other a long time, but we've had a lot of conversations. I stayed for a week, and I think we've got the same ideas as to how to move this forward. And so, I'm pretty confident about that.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a successful endeavor, and I certainly wish you guys the best. I know that merging companies is never easy, and it's got to be particularly difficult when you're doing an internet merger with a traditional magazine. But I think I speak for most of your subscribers when I say that we're glad that you're going to be around and that we're going to get to continue to read it.
Tom, well, that's good.
Go ahead, Richard.
No, I just say that's good. I mean, I think... the subscribers, you know, we've said that we intend to fully honour the obligations there. It may require some patience while we actually get the business plan exactly how we want it. But for there's no point in just riding along and making things fail again. We've got to make sure it's right and it's solid, and get the support of the brands around us and the subscribers, and give them what they want and what they're looking for. So we've got to give some careful thought to that. But we will, there's an edition coming out in late December, early January, and hopefully there'll be some messages in there for the subscribers and the readers. And, we'll try and work with them, get some ideas from them and the brands. I'm already talking to some of the leading brands on, you know, how we can work together and make the thing work. So that's the idea. And I'm sure that we've got enough enthusiastic people around us to make it work.
Tom, from a practical perspective, when can subscribers expect to see their next issue? Sometime this year?
Yes, we're publishing an issue in the standard format of Fish and Fly at the end of December. So people should have it in maybe that week before Christmas and New Year's, or right after the first of the year. And I can tell you that it will be a best-of issue. We're going through our archives and selecting a number of articles, including the aforementioned Catherine Hooper story.
Well, I'm sure that will have garnered new interest.
Right. So those who missed it can look forward to it. We haven't decided whether or not that issue will be available in a brown paper wrap at your local fly shop.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Richard Hewitt and Tom Pirro, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
It's a great pleasure.
Death, you cruel master, when the wind began to blow, rode in on a team of horses, cried, oh, death, won't you let me go?
Music this week is courtesy of The Ducks, that's D-U-H-K-S, off their new album Fast Paced World, which came out in August. We have yet another editor to thank for that particular recommendation. Phil Monahan of American Angler is a big fan of their music, and I appreciate his input in getting them on the show. Thanks once again to Richard and to Tom. I think this was a kind of a unique endeavor to get them both here via internet. For those who weren't familiar, Richard was actually in London, and Tom was in, I believe, Washington State, so... very impressed with the abilities of the internet to bring people together, and I'm looking forward to doing it again next week when I bring Nick Lyons on the podcast. Nick is a famous publisher and writer. I know you guys are going to be really excited to hear what he has to say, and I'm sure that'll go for the rest of the guests on season 4 of the Itinerant Angler podcast.